Welcome to another episode of Inside Ivy Hoops, looking ahead to the weekend in which we cross over into the second half of Ivy League action. Mike Tony here, joined for the first time on the show by IHO Harvard beat writer Jack Clark, who previously called almost 3 years worth of Harvard basketball games for WHRB, Harvard Student Radio. Jack, thanks so much for coming on the show to talk Harvard hoops and a lot more.
Thank you, Mike. It's been a pleasure contributing to IHO for the first time, and it's great to be on the show.
It's great to have you. Now, our listeners are accustomed to listening to George Clark, IHO's Princeton beat writer. You're not related to George, are you?
Not that I know of. No known relation there, but glad to hear that other Clarks out there doing good work.
No nepotism at IHO. Are you related to Jack Clark? The 1947 Harvard grad Jack Clark, who captained the Crimson's 1946 NCAA tournament team?
I am not, no, but I did know about that overlap since he got honored a couple times while I was at WHRB. So no relation there either, unfortunately.
There's enough room at Harvard for multiple Jack Clarks over generations.
Right, once every 50 years or so.
Yeah. So let's get started by actually not delving into the league action just yet, although there's plenty to get into there. But Jeff Borzello wrote a very interesting piece this week for ESPN on grad transfers, asking the question, is the Ivy League transfer policy helping players or hurting them? Don't think we really need to explain the policy in this space. I think listeners probably know what it is. But I think the piece kind of answered the question pretty definitively that it is, in fact, hurting them. Four men's coaches, Jim Engels, Steve Donahue, James Jones, Mike Martin, were all quoted in the piece, essentially saying, why can't the players have this choice? It would help them. There are players that want to stick around, like Rafa Maya of Brown, who eventually had to transfer to Pitt. But really, I mean, to me, the more important thing, even more important than preserving the competitiveness of the league, which is something that the policy certainly detracts from. I mean, I'm hard pressed to think of an Ivy that hasn't lost a great talent to a grad transfer over the years. But really, you're just taking away the freedom of choice and that the empowerment that comes with it from these players, from these students. At least that's my take on it. That seems to be what the temperature is. Do you have any thoughts, Jack, on grad transfers and where the league stands on this?
Yeah, I definitely agree, Mike, with that perspective. I think from my understanding, there's a pretty clear answer to the question that the article poses. But the reason I was excited to see the article is that it would force the Ivy League to have a response for why that rule is in place. And I personally was disappointed with, I think it was Robin Harris quoted. And generally, I think the Ivy has been pretty good about sort of responding to feedback and laying out explanations for why things are the way that they are. But I thought the response was definitely lacking on this issue in particular. Because it was sort of looked at as a defensive issue of, oh, you don't think the Ivy League is good enough. You don't think it's competitive enough. And that seemed to me to miss the point entirely, because the whole point is that this issue has only arisen as a result of the Ivy League getting more competitive. And so it's one of those things where it's a great thing that the Ivy League has gotten better. I mean, we've seen the level of recruiting go up. We've seen the level of play go up. We've seen the Ivy be competitive in non-conference play in the postseason. And so for the first time, you're actually having to, you know, there's a number of players more than you can count on one hand who might qualify for this and end up transferring somewhere else. And so it's a great problem to have, but it's a problem nonetheless. And so I think it was somewhat obtuse so far, the response from the Ivy League.
Yeah, absolutely. There was a quote in the piece, Robin Harris is quoted as saying, regarding the rule, what's the problem with it? We're still continuing to thrive as a league. I don't, you know, the quality of the league and whether it's thriving or not doesn't seem to be as important as what the players want to do with their lives. You know, where they want to go or how they want to finish. And if they want to finish at an Ivy, you know, they're allowed to do that. I mean, the quality of the play, you know, it's easy to get wrapped up in that and prioritize that, but that's something that could only be bolstered anyway by as you said, Jack. So, I mean, yeah, I guess we're on the same mind of that. I did also want to get your take, Jack, on the issue of declining student attendance over time at Ivy basketball games. Not anything new, but it's something that I thought the Daily Pennsylvanian did a good job this week on really highlighting why there aren't more students attending basketball games at the Palestra in particular. You know, apathy toward Penn basketball on a single school basis was very clear when I went there in the early part of the decade. I graduated in 2014. It obviously goes back further than that. You know, the declining attendance, as the piece notes, you know, really started in the early 2000s. And it's not really just an Ivy League thing either. If you go outside of the power conferences, I think you see quite a bit of that. I did want to ask you, Jack, when you went to Harvard, you know, coming off of, well, really still being in a great era for Harvard basketball with four straight NCAA tournament appearances and Ivy League championships since then. What was the temperature at Harvard? How would you define what student interest in the program was?
Yeah, not to sugarcoat it, it was pretty grim. And I think that was a pretty constant lament. For those of us who understood just the privilege of getting to watch quality basketball at a place like Harvard, which hasn't always been the case, and getting to see some really high level basketball competition. And I think it's thrown into relief very clearly at the Palestra, you know, because of the history, and Philly's a great college basketball town in a way that Boston just isn't. And so it's, I think, more shocking when it's hard to fill the Palestra. But I do think that it's actually more acute, for Harvard, and relative to, you know, performance, a team like Princeton, at least my anecdotal impression, is that there's more student support, despite sort of similar, records and patterns of performance over the last couple of years. And I don't know whether that's just a function of school culture, of whether, you know, Princeton obviously has, going back a long time, but one of the more distinguished basketball histories with Pete Carroll and the Princeton offense. So I don't know whether it's just an amalgam of factors or something deeper rooted. But I think at Harvard, it's particularly acute. And on what really amazes me is that the Ivy League's recruiting has gotten better even as this attendance has been declining, because it's a hard, you know, it's a hard pitch when you've got a great team and you're not playing in front of, sort of the proportionate number of fans and getting the proportionate amount of support. So I also really appreciated the article because it helped put it in the context of, you know, college basketball's broader attendance problems. But I think it's exacerbated by some specifically Ivy League circumstances. Obviously, there's the trope that, you know, Ivy kids are busy and off doing homework, and that's certainly true. But I think part of it is just school spirit and unity in general, and that's something I think the article touched on briefly, is in some ways a casualty of having a smorgasbord of resources and clubs and activities to choose from. And that's great, you know, for the individual student to be able to pursue whatever their passion is. But it also, I think, does take away from some of the common support that you'd find at other schools.
Yeah, certainly there's a problem there, attracting student interest. But, you know, what do you do? I mean, I saw a comment on Twitter, someone who shared the story saying that, you know, it's not a good look for Penn students. And I don't know. I don't really agree with that. Students are going about their daily lives. It's up to Penn Athletics and every Ivy school to try to do what they can to bring the students in. I do buy the fact that, you know, there's only so much time in a day to cram in classes, studying, all work obligations, social obligations. You know, there's a lot to do. And, you know, if having dinner with a friend on a Friday night for 45 minutes makes more sense than going to a basketball game for 2 hours, well, then, you know, so be it. I mean, you know, we talk about athletics maybe pervading too much into the lives of students at some of the power schools where everything right. revolves around the program. I mean, when you think of Duke, for example, as a university, I mean, you think of Coach K. Yep. First, I mean, that's who you think of. You don't think of,
and that's at a pretty, I mean, an academically elite institution, right?
Right.
So,
exactly,
it's an even starker example.
Right. Yeah. Nobody. I mean, when I went to Penn, no people didn't go to Penn. Often, they didn't know who Jerome Allen was.
You know? Right.
It just wasn't a thing. And you know, over the long run, there's just more stuff to do. You know, so I'm not, it's easy to be disappointed about it, but the fact is that the thing that made college special, in many cases for a lot of, alumni is just not the same. And, you know, I don't fault the students for that. Those who, and I don't even know that they're necessarily missing out, because, you know, if they're getting enriching lives outside of that sphere, then fine. But for those who do enjoy it and are attracted to it, then that's good. And that's why there's a podcast about it that you're listening to right now. So there are still some that that do appreciate it. Yeah, but that in as much as it is a problem, and it certainly is a problem for Ivy Athletics, it is not going away anytime soon.
Yeah, and there's no immediate prescription, as you said, because it's not There's no pernicious problem that's undergirding the whole thing. It's a combination of mostly good things that might be detracting from attendance. So it's a tough problem to solve. But you know, I think there always will be a baseline of support for sure. And I think you know, alumni are very invested. I think I saw that even more going to the Palestra for the first time as my sophomore year, the Ivy League tournament, right, the first time at the Palestra. And it was just great to see the Penn alumni coming back and just sort of Philly college basketball fans in general. And so I think that's one way that the Ivy League could grow is, you know, it's great to have the students there and they should be the core supporters. But making sure that the outreach extends beyond that. And that's one thing I think Harvard has started to do really well in the last couple of years. And so you get a little bit more of a mix. It might not be quite as student-dominated as, you know, the Cameron Crazies or some of those other bigger schools. But you still get fans who are excited to be there.
I did want to switch gears and look backward to, just briefly, the 2020 class of legends of Ivy League basketball, looking at some of the legends that maybe attracted some higher attendance numbers back in the day. A lot of good legends there. Don't want to list them all, but you know, certainly, I don't know, Jeff Foote comes to mind for Cornell, Jewel Clark for Penn, Brian Taylor for Princeton, who was part of our ongoing Ivy 60 for 60 series. A lot of great talent. Columbia's men's honoree is still to be announced. I don't know what's going on there, but the
not sure if the paperwork got in.
Yeah, the drum roll keeps going on that. Harvard had Charlie Baker as the male honoree, which was interesting. Given the fact that he didn't really have a distinguished on the court production.
He was the open a defensive minded power forward, which I think is you know, terrible.
Yeah, and didn't he? I think he's on the record multiple times in recent years saying that he regretted going to Harvard. Which,
oh, I missed that part. I actually did not see that quote.
Yeah, so that one struck me as a little perplexing. I never see, very rarely do I see the point in objecting when all things being equal, someone is honored for something, saying, oh no, that person shouldn't have been honored, or that person shouldn't have made that Hall of Fame, or whatever the case may be. And I don't know if I'd even go that far with Charlie Baker, but it was an interesting choice. Of course, for those that don't know, Charlie Baker, governor of Massachusetts, currently in his second term, a moderate Republican, and Harvard basketball alum. You know,
yeah, so. definitely one of the stranger choices on the league, probably right behind the TBA from Columbia. but yeah, I mean, especially just because there's such a rich history of Ivy League basketball. You know, there's a lot of people who could be honored, you know, with perfect justification. So yeah. I'll be happy to see more names on the list.
Yeah, public service is to be commended. Maybe that was the angle there, and I don't.
Yeah, and
I don't
it gets fault, them a little publicity, which is.
Yeah, I don't fault it for a second, but it was interesting. It was an eyebrow raiser, I suppose. Well, let's talk about actual Ivy League basketball on the court action here. How many minutes into the show now? Let's start with the roller coaster weekend that the Harvard men had, because it could wind up being a very consequential one, both in the Ivy title hunt and the race for number four seed in the Ivy tournament. All of the Cardiac Crimson's six Ivy contests have been decided by 5 points or less. Both games last weekend decided by the slimmest of margins. Harvard won a seventh straight regular season game against Yale Friday, surviving career scoring highs from Azar Swain and Paul Atkinson in a four-point play opportunity for Swain. Could have been disastrous for Harvard had he converted to force a likely overtime period. But, Jack, as you wrote in your recap of the Harvard-Brown game, live by the opponent's last-second free throw, die by the opponent's last-second free throw, and Tamanac Cho sealed a huge win for Brown Saturday night over Harvard in Providence, getting that three-point play at the foul line with half a second remaining after Robert Baker called for a foul. Of course, Harvard was the preseason favorite to win the Ivy League. That was back when it was assumed that they might be healthy. And that was probably not a wise assumption given recent history.
Never an assumption with Harvard.
No, in retrospect. And now it's currently on the outside looking in to the Ivy tournament in the conference standings in fifth place after the Brown loss. Jack, what are your thoughts on how Harvard is looking as it enters the Ivy stretch run here, still without Bryce Aiken?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm a part of the process for being a Harvard fan this year, and really a Harvard fan over the last couple of years, is sort of adjusting expectations versus reality, because there was a lot of hype coming into the season for Harvard, and so much of that was built on maybe seeing Seth Towns and Bryce Aiken back together on the same court. And now, you know, it's looking like we may not see either of them. There's still some hope for Bryce, I guess, but certainly can't count on him to be 100% coming back from that kind of knee injury, even if he does make it back onto the court. So with that being said, there's a lot of variance, I feel, for this Harvard team, just because there are so many, like, middle-of-the-road, really solid rotation players who are being called upon to be primary, really behind Noah Kirkwood and Chris Lewis. And I think I mentioned this briefly in the article, but there's just probably five or six who could go for 18 like Robert Baker did, I believe, on Saturday, or just disappear entirely even after a double-double, I believe, in both games this weekend. He's still averaging 6 points a game in conference play. So there's just a lot of variance down the roster, and that leads to wildly exciting games and a huge win at Yale. The seven-game winning streak is, in to my mind, mystifying. Just the law of averages alone, and given the fact that Yale was pretty clearly a better team last year, and this year seems to also, without Aiken, Yale definitely has the edge. So, you know, they play well against Yale, they're playing up to competition. And then against Brown, the thing that keeps coming back to bite them is just not having a second guard. Christian Juzang has been great. He's playing within himself. You know, he's upped his assists. He's averaging 4 assists a game, which has been huge. It doesn't sound like a lot, but for a Harvard team that really needs ball movement and struggles with turnovers, that's been huge in conference play. But behind him, it's a black hole in the backcourt, and that forces players like Rio Haskett and Noah Kirkwood and even Justin Bassey, who are they're really slotted to be wings, and all three of those players are best when they're able to play off the ball and drive to the basket and attack the paint, but instead they're forced to sort of run the offense from the top, and that really bites them at the end of games. So I think unless they can fix that deficit, they still have a good chance to make the Ivy League tournament. I think that's more likely than not, because they will get a chance to be at home instead of playing a five-game road trip. But they're definitely not at the level of Yale or even Princeton or Penn, to be honest, in a crunch time game. Unless they can somehow adjust their backcourt strategy.
Yeah, as you said, that seven-game regular season streak is very It is mystifying when you think about it. You know, beating Yale before a raucous JLA crowd, despite getting very little offensively from either Chris Lewis or Justin Bassey, is impressive. And it does bode well. I mean, I do think Harvard's ability to protect the rim, crash the boards, limit second chance opportunities defensively, will pay dividends as the scene shifts to Leviades, almost for good down the stretch.
Right. Home field advantage is the one thing that could put them over the top. I think that even without Aiken, their best chance is to just get comfortable at home, ride off the crowd energy. And you know, we talked about the client ends, but will show up if they make it to the tournament. That is their path. Be smart, play within themselves, defend, and play their defense, really, as you said. Trust Chris Lewis, trust Noah Kirkwood, even trust Chris Ledlam at this point. I mean, he's a freshman, he's been pressed into service, but he's been really impressive.
Yeah, six of the final eight are at home for Harvard, and of course, if they make the Ivy League tournament, they will stay right there. Where hopefully they can, you know, have teams keep from putting teams on the foul line. They've been getting beat at the foul line recently. Allowed the highest distribution of points scored there in Ivy play through six games, while having the worst free throw percentage in league play themselves. That's not a great recipe for success, but as noted, you know, the Crimson do have, they do seem to have the defense and the, I think the size in some matchups to get into the tournament and do some damage, once they get there.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they're, The foul line, that's a great point about the free throw shooting disparity, and that really comes into play against Yale and Brown in particular, come to mind, because of players like Azar Swain and then Brandon Anderson had just a great game. And so with, again, like their defense is good, and they have that size advantage, but beyond Juzang, they don't have a ton of they really don't have any other lockdown defender. I mean, Haskett has his moments, but as we saw with that 4-point play, he's prone to getting beaten and make decisions. Justin Bassey too, but even Justin Bassey struggled against smaller guards. The archetype for that is, oh man, I'm forgetting the name, but the Yale point guard last year, always, you know, for his junior and senior seasons, just always went to town on the Crimson. Part of that was them not being able to keep up lead-wise. And so, you know, they're getting to the rim, they're getting fouled, and both those guys are money.
Yeah, Alex Copeland. Yes. He always, with the rainbow jumper, always.
always so pretty.
Yeah, very, very much so, yes. And moving to Yale, perfect segue. They rebounded well after the Harvard loss, 18-point win over Dartmouth, dropping the Big Green to 0-6 in league play, even without Jordan Bruner sidelined with a banged up knee. As an aside, Dartmouth has now lost 9 games in a row, hasn't won since December 18th, after having raced out to a 4-1 start against Division I competition. Chris Knight, you know, is a great player, but Dartmouth is struggling to add offense, despite you know, what some of the performances that they've gotten throughout the season. They do have the capability. It's just not putting it all together. But Jack, what were your thoughts on Yale, given their performance this weekend, particularly against Harvard.
Very impressed by this Yale team. And I think a lot of credit has to obviously go to Swain, who's really stepped in this game, and then to Bruner and Atkinson. They're just beasts in the front court. But with the one blemish being the loss to Harvard at home, which is a rivalry game, they've outperformed, I think, sort of the intelligentsia's expectations. And they're a strong favorite for the Ivy Championship, unless Aiken returns at anywhere near 100%, in which case I think it becomes a little bit more of a coin flip. I think, Swain stepping up and then being able to dominate the boards with Atkinson and Bruner is really crucial in the Ivy League. You lose when you give up a lot of second chance opportunities, and they've been able to prevent that for the most part. So, good things ahead for this Yale team.
And Harvard's other opponent last weekend, Brown, has shot the ball pretty inefficiently and has the worst turnover percentage in Ivy play so far, but they've got a strong, underrated defense. I think it's underrated anyway. And obviously did what they needed to do in back-to-back squeakers over Harvard and Dartmouth before that. What did you think of Brown?
Yeah, I definitely think they're a team that's going to be in a lot of games. They've lost a few by double digits, I think, but they have a chance to be in every single game, even against teams that probably would be considered to have superior talent. They play hard. They're a gritty team, and then having someone like Tamineng Cho, who can pretty much guard all five positions. I think your point that they're efficient. They do turn the ball over a lot, and they're prone to. It was hard. The refs at the Harvard Brown game were blowing the whistle very, very quickly. So this is not entirely on Brown, but they are prone to fouling opponent on the line. So someone needs to step up if they're going to compete with the top tier of the Ivy League and compete in the Ivy League tournament. They need Anderson, who's been playing really well but still has trouble with decision making, to really step up, or they need someone like Joshua Howard to bolster the front court with Cho. So I think they're close. They're closer than they've been in a long time to competing at the top level. And I think they're a significant step up above the bottom tier of the Ivy League. Right now, I think Harvard and Brown are at pretty similar levels. They've got, I think Harvard with a higher ceiling, but maybe even a lower floor. And so I think you can rightly classify them as sort of the middle of the Ivy League. You got Penn, Princeton in the upper middle class, and then Yale at the top. And then, poor Dartmouth sitting at the bottom, which is strange not to have Cornell there, but I was really expecting that coming into the season. But right now, it's Dartmouth's place to lose.
Yeah, the challenge for Brown is that six of its final eight are away from Providence.
Yeah.
Only Princeton and Penn have yet to visit Brown, and those won't be easy games for either side, and we'll delve more into the upcoming weekend a little later in the show. For now, it's time to mind our P's and C's. Penn and Princeton had to contend with delayed start times for their Empire State road trips last weekend. And Princeton disappointed at Cornell, while Penn notched a road sweep, which is no small feat. Given that the Ivy League is fourth in Division I in home percentage so far,
right?
In league play per KenPom. Ryan Bentley injured during Penn's win at Columbia, but Jonathan Tannenwald of the Philadelphia Inquirer reported Wednesday that Bentley is not yet done for the season after spraining his left ankle at Levy and will not play this weekend, but isn't officially done for the season. Of course, Bentley missed all of last season due to injury. So, yeah, we'll see how that goes. But
yeah, and you hate to see that for someone like Ryan Bentley, who's just a big part of that team, or was 2 years ago, and just a, you know, a leader on that team now. It's always tough to see him go down, but hopefully he can come back and contribute and be somewhere near healthy by the end of the season.
Yeah, that could go a long way towards securing Penn's slot in the Ivy League tournament. Certainly, they're going to miss him in a pivotal weekend at home against Brown and Yale. Switching over now to the women's side, Penn was involved in the game of the weekend on the women's side last weekend, the overtime win over Columbia at the Palestra. Penn ultimately winning that game inside, even as Columbia got and pretty much stayed hot for much of the game from outside. Abby Hsu ending up with 28 points. Aaliyah Parker, though, really done well inside, looking much more like herself, starting to become a double-double machine again. For Penn, which also took care of business against Cornell, Princeton shut both of the C's down, holding Cornell to 29 points. Great weekend for Harvard, sweeping Yale, and then Brown handing Yale its first loss of the Ivy slate, as the men counterparts did the same night. Any thoughts, Jack, on where the Harvard women stand, or how they've looked coming off of a great weekend for them?
Yeah, you know, my biggest takeaway from this Harvard season so far is that it's very difficult to replace a player like Katie Benson, who's sitting out this season, going to be playing for Texas next year. But Lola Mullaney has stepped up to the task in a big way. And it's rare to find that from a freshman. So she's been, the rookie of the week 3 times in Ivy League play. She's their leading scorer. And you have a weird mix of, you know, a young team in that Mullaney's the engine. I think a couple of the other starters are freshmen or sophomores, but then you need a reliable veteran, and Jeannie Bame has been that in the post. She, I think, looking up the stats, she has one more rebound than she has points. And so really solid, consistent play down low. And beating Yale was huge, puts them in the driver's seat for a spot at the Ivy tournament. And you never know when you're playing at home, getting that home boost can, everyone's looking up at Princeton right now, but playing at home can maybe be that boost they need to get into the tournament.
And kudos to Brown for its first Ivy win in 18 games, first Ivy road win since February of 2018, getting it done in impressive fashion at Dartmouth last weekend. Dartmouth on the women's side just hasn't proven that it has the offensive firepower it needs to make the Ivy League tournament. It's just tough. You have to be able to generate more offense than that, and Dartmouth also a pretty undersized team too. In trying to build off that Ivy opening win against Harvard, but it's been tough going to date.
Yeah, kind of a shocker in retrospect.
You never know what's going to happen on either side of things. But looking ahead to this weekend, on the women's side, it's a big one. The matchup certainly of the weekend comes Friday night in New Haven, Princeton at Yale. Of course, Yale last season handed Princeton an overtime loss at Jadwin. And, you know, Yale's got a good front court. This is a matchup of the league's best scoring offense, Yale, in, you know, one of the nation's best scoring defenses in Princeton. Strength versus strength. Princeton definitely seems to have the upper hand in that game, within a game, and certainly the overall game. But you know, we'll see how that one plays out. Penn, of course, naturally visits Yale Saturday night. Another huge matchup and a great chance for Yale to really cement its place. Maybe it's a second place perch atop the league minus Princeton at this point in New Haven. That game, a 4 o'clock tip. And yeah, all of the games, of course, on ESPN Plus. Columbia's games also on SNY locally. Princeton at Brown at 5 o'clock Saturday on NESN Plus as well. Switching back over to preview the men's action. Yeah, a lot of switching or not switching, staying with those two teams, Yale and Princeton. That game will be on ESPN News Friday night. Nationally televised, as it should be. Ken Pom not very kind to Princeton, given its struggles in the non-conference. Predicts Yale winning that one with a 71% chance to do so, but I feel like it's more of a toss-up than that, given the way conference play has gone. And just the way Princeton has been shooting the ball lately, and the intensity of the defense. I guess you could make a pretty long compound sentence out of what Princeton has done well, what it's done better at least since the struggles of non-conference play and the short-term injury of Ryan Schwieger. But that's an intriguing matchup there, for sure. Harvard, finally, gets to, stay at home against Cornell and Columbia respectively. What are you looking, for, Jack, this weekend from the Crimson as they try to, settle things back down and, win, with some ease this time at home?
Well, they certainly should. this, you know, in an ideal scenario for Harvard, this is a get back into rhythm game, find a groove before some more challenging matchups. But, you know, this Harvard, right, they haven't played up to their competition, and they've sometimes played down. So I think there's a chance that one of these games is a lot closer than it should be. In terms of what I'll be looking for, I think free throw shooting is a simple answer, but it's a key one. Avoiding foul trouble and then literally just raising their percentage at the line would be a reassuring sign that things would get better in the closing stretch. But mostly I think just, you know, proving that they can take care of business, working on getting that chemistry. Maybe we'll hear, I mean, at this point, if Aiken is not, if there are no ripples, in the news about Aiken, then I think it's pretty safe to say he may not be joining us for the rest of the season, but this would be a great time if he's anywhere near turn to get his rhythm back without, you know, necessarily being in a really tight game. So we'll see, but they should come away with a sweep. I'm certainly not 100% confident that it's going to happen.
Well, Harvard, of course, got swept by Cornell last season, so it's not you don't have to go back very far to get motivation if you're Harvard,
right,
to at least take care of business on that Friday night. Brown and Penn, of course, revisiting the regular season finale for both teams a year ago, in which Penn won a win and in game to punch its Ivy League tournament ticket. That game was a very low scoring matchup, and this game could prove to be the same, with Penn's defense looking stronger in recent weeks, and as mentioned before, Brown's being strong itself. Perimeter defense has been much better lately, both in the final results statistically, but you can tell that they're eliminating opportunities. They've been strong inside, of course, as well. How things look with Ryan Bentley out of the picture will be interesting, but Dev Goodman has stepped it up as of late. Has been aggressive, getting to the line a lot in that Cornell win, and he's been efficient from 2-point range, which is always important when the shots aren't falling, which sometimes they won't, but he can definitely turn on the jets and get things going, both in transition and just on a dime in the half court offense, driving inside. So could be the key. And anytime you play Brandon Anderson, you run the risk of getting beat from the free throw line with him doing what he does. So that will be an interesting matchup for sure. And that's to say nothing of the Yell matchup at the Palestra the following night, which could be huge in the Ivy League title race and the race for the 4 seed as well, potentially. So a lot to process coming up at the Palestra for sure.
It's never dull.
No. Anything else that you're looking forward to in the Ivy Hoops world this weekend, Jack?
I'll be interested to see. We didn't talk about the Columbia Dartmouth game as much as the others, but I kind of want to see a win for Dartmouth there. Just, they've been close a couple times and love to see them get on the board. But mainly, I think the Yale Princeton game, the Brown Penn game, they're of equal interest. Yale could run away with it at Princeton, in which case they'd sort of prove the point that they are the class of the Ivy League and everyone else is catching up. But like you said, there's a lot of reasons to believe that the margin is not as big as it may seem. And to me, every time someone goes to Jadwin, weird things can happen. That gym is tough to play in a road environment. And so if I were a betting man, I would bet for a close game. And then Brown and Penn, too. I see that one coming down to the wire. So I'm excited. I'll be looking at both.
Yeah, Yale and Brown on the road this weekend. If you can just get a split, you can call that maybe not a win per se, but definitely not a loss either.
Definitely, yeah, for Brown. A split, I think, would be big. And for Yale, even a split is certainly survivable.
Yeah, we'll see if they can get it done. And if either notches a sweep, Yale looking ahead to a league title and a tournament appearance, certainly on the menu for Brown. If Brown can somehow pull that off. They basically will be hugging the inside track down the stretch. So we'll see how it all plays out. But Jack Clark, thank you so much for coming on Inside Ivy Hoops. Appreciate the knowledge, and you know, we've all been following along, getting your reflections on Crimson basketball this season, and appreciate you coming on the show to impart your round ball knowledge for us.
Absolutely, my pleasure, Mike. Obviously, great talking with you and getting a read on what else is going on, getting the inside scoop on the other teams in the Ivy, and looking forward to following the rest of the season along with you guys.